This is debt and credit expert Jen Lee with Debt Therapy. We are here to talk about all things financial that the world forgot to teach us.
Hello, this is Jen Lee with Debt Therapy. And something really new and exciting in 2020 that I've done is I started a live version of Debt Therapy. It's called Debt Therapy Live. And it is, if you're local in California, we meet in San Ramon, and it's on Meetup. So I want to put that out there because today's topic is going to come from the Debt Therapy Live that we did last night. And the purpose of Debt Therapy Live is the same as Debt Therapy: educate, figure out what misconceptions are out there, talk about finance in a non-judgmental way where you aren't feeling shamed for asking what you think may be a stupid question, but it's really not a stupid question. So one of the questions that came up last night was about bankruptcy. And I wanted to talk through a little bit about the different chapters of bankruptcy. So in this particular podcast, I'm going to focus on Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Because the question always comes up is, what's the difference? How does it work? What does it mean? And it seems to be a very unclear concept to people what it actually means to file for bankruptcy. So in this brief 10 minutes that I have of your week, I'm just going to do a quick rundown of Chapter 7, what it does, what it doesn't do, and what some of the misconceptions out there are about it. So a Chapter 7 bankruptcy is what most people think of when they think of bankruptcy. You're just getting rid of debt. There's no payment plans. There's no reorganization. You file for bankruptcy and your debt's gone and you start over. You get a fresh start. And the purpose of bankruptcy really is to give the unfortunate debtor person a fresh start. So a Chapter 7 is usually used to clear credit card debt, unsecured debt like online loans, personal loans, medical debt. And there's often a misconception about medical debt, how medical is not something that you can discharge in bankruptcy, and that's false. Medical debt is dischargeable in all bankruptcies, including Chapter 7. It does not help with things like student loans. For the most part, there are exceptions to every rule. There are ways to discharge student loans in bankruptcy, but they're very difficult. So for the most part, student loans are not discharged in Chapter 7. It doesn't discharge if you want to if you have taxes from recent years, if you have child support or alimony that you owe. It doesn't discharge those types of debts. So there are things that Chapter 7 doesn't take care of. The most common reason someone files Chapter 7 is because of credit cards, collections, and medical. So when you are looking at your options and you're thinking about Chapter 7, and those are the types of debts you have, then that's the first bankruptcy route we look at. It doesn't help if your house is in foreclosure. It doesn't help catch up your mortgage or anything like that. Then we're talking about different chapters of bankruptcy that I'm going to review in some of my next few podcasts. So when you're looking at Chapter 7, to qualify for Chapter 7, there is an income requirement. The U.S. trustee puts out a list of median incomes by state. And in order to automatically, for the most part, qualify for Chapter 7, you have to be below the median income for your state. And for example, in California right now, that's around $59,000 in annual income for a household of one. It's around $77,000 for a household of two, and it goes up from there depending on your household size. That doesn't seem like a very large amount of money to live on in some areas. So a lot of times in the Bay Area, we're looking at higher incomes. You can still qualify for Chapter 7 if you're over that income limit, but you have to go through what's called the means test. And the means test is, I find, quite misunderstood. The means test is based on IRS guidelines for food, housing, clothing, that kind of thing. So there's certain deductions that you're allowed to take from your budget that are standard for everyone. And then there are other deductions that you're allowed to take based on your actual expenditures. So things like the actual amount of taxes that have to be withheld each month in order for you to pay all of your taxes, the actual amount of money that you spend on healthcare expenses, the actual amount of money you spend on health insurance, things like that are not based on IRS guidelines. So the bottom line on that is if we can still show that you don't have any money left over each month to pay debt, you still qualify for Chapter 7, even if you're over the median income guidelines. So one of the big misconceptions I see often on the internet, I read a lot of message boards, a lot of Q&A. I don't usually respond because I don't want to give legal advice, but I don't. I like to read to see what people are saying. And one of the most often misquoted things out there is that you can't qualify for Chapter 7 if you make more than the median income, which is not always true. You can still qualify, but there are more hoops to jump through and not everyone qualifies. So, and there is a couple exceptions to that. Social Security income doesn't qualify as income for the means test. Veterans benefits now don't qualify as income for the means test based on recent laws that were passed. And if you have mostly business debt, there are ways to get around the means test. So the important part here is for your situation, make sure you talk to an attorney to find out what you qualify for. That's the really most important part. But I want you to understand what you're looking at when you go into things. So if you decide that Chapter 7, you qualify for it, you're getting rid of the right kinds of debts, you know, credit cards, collections, medical bills, it will stop wage garnishments due to credit cards, collections, that kind of thing. So if you decide that's the route you want to go, you work together with your attorney to get documents together. Things like 6 months of pay stubs. I ask for 6 months of bank statements. There's a lot of documentation that goes into making sure that everything you file with the court is accurate. And that's something you really want to discuss with the attorney that you hire. So when you go in and you fill out all your forms, you list all of your assets, you list all of your debts. The way Chapter 7 works is you're basically going into court and there's a trustee who's appointed. And the trustee's job is to look through your assets to see if anything can be liquidated, sold, to satisfy your debts. Each state has different things that you can keep. So this is why it's really important to talk to an attorney again in your state, because each state is different in the amount of money that you can have in a bank account, if anything, the amount of money you can have in equity in a car or a house before the trustee is able to sell it. So if you really have no significant assets, you don't own a house, and you may have a retirement account. Retirement accounts are protected in bankruptcy as long as they're your retirement accounts. And so a lot of times when you go into Chapter 7, there are no assets available for creditors or for the trustee to sell. If there are assets, sometimes it's still not a bad idea to file a case, because the trustee then is going to take the assets, sell them, distribute out the funds to your creditors. The trustee in your bankruptcy case is appointed, and their job is to look at assets, and they get paid a commission if they find assets to sell. So they really are motivated a little bit to find assets and sell them. So the most common Chapter 7 case is someone with very little in assets that could be sold. Credit card debt, medical debt, collections, possibly old taxes, but that's a whole analysis that you need to have an attorney run. Probably not student loans. You can have a car with a car loan and keep your car. You do have to keep making the payments on the car. You don't get to just get a free car out of the deal. And then your attorney will walk you through what that looks like to continue making those payments, and if the lender, how the lender works with payments after bankruptcy. If you have a house with a mortgage and there isn't a lot of equity, or there it's underwater, then you can continue making payments generally on that. And again, while bankruptcy law is federal, each state and even each district within a state have different ways of doing things. So you make sure you talk to someone local too if you're considering Chapter 7. Again, the purpose of this discussion is I want to clear up some of the mystery out there about what Chapter 7 does, because you always hear my uncle's dog's girlfriend told me and how they got a free house or they did something in chapter 7. And it's not exactly true. Some of the other misconceptions about chapter 7. So you file the case, the trustee looks at the case, you go to a meeting in your district with the trustee so that they can review everything. You do testify under penalty of perjury that everything you've listed is accurate, that you're not hiding assets, things like that. And then the discharge comes in about 90 days after filing. And so what that means is once that discharge is entered, any of those debts that were in your bankruptcy where they received notice, then they can't collect from you anymore. They can't send you notices. They can't call you, anything like that. So that's usually where the relief sets in after that discharge comes in. And then it's time to rebuild. And so when I'm talking about Chapter 7 in this meeting last night, we were talking about what the difference is between different bankruptcies. And I often hear from people that your credit is killed for 10 years if you file for Chapter 7. You can't get a mortgage, you can't get a car loan, you can't get a credit card, you can't do anything for 10 years. And that's probably the biggest misconception out there and the one that holds people back the most from finding out what they really can do. And it's not true. It is on your credit report for 10 years as a public record. If you're applying for an apartment or a house or a job and they ask, have you filed for bankruptcy? And you filed, you check the yes box no matter what. Don't lie, don't hide it. Most of the time they're not checking to see whether you're a deadbeat who doesn't pay your bills. They just want to, first of all, on employment, they want to see if you're telling the truth. And then for apartments and housing, it's a factor because they want to make sure that they know who's coming in and if you can pay. I often look at it if someone came to you, so let's say you're a landlord, and someone comes in, you have two applications in front of you, and one application has $50,000 in credit card debt, some collection accounts, lots of late payments, cards are all maxed out, and the other person comes in, and they have a Chapter 7 bankruptcy listed in the last couple years. No debt, maybe a car loan, nothing else. Which one is the safer bet? Which one do you think is going to be able to pay your rent each month so that you can pay the mortgage on your property? More than likely, it's going to be the one who filed for bankruptcy because they're not choosing each month whether to pay credit cards, collections, or whether to pay their rent. So from a risk standpoint, a bankruptcy looks much better than someone with lots of collections, cards maxed out, and that kind of thing. So you kind of have to think about how it looks and not necessarily what the stigma that you think is attached to it. The other thing about bankruptcy is your credit score can actually go up when you file, especially with Chapter 7. I've seen this where if the cards were already maxed out, cards were in collections, potentially there may have been a collections lawsuit filed. Credit score is probably already pretty low, maybe in the high 400s, low 500s. Usually filing for bankruptcy makes your credit score go up right away. And I've seen this over and over and over again, where we file, the case comes in, and 90 days, 120 days after filing, then we've checked the credit score and the credit score is already low 600s and improving from there. So it is not true that your credit score is completely destroyed for 10 years. I would like to put that out there. It's not true. Now, if you go into bankruptcy with an 800 credit score, it's going to go down. That's one of those things that, and sometimes we have filed for bankruptcies where someone had an 800 credit score because we were preemptively heading off some of the financial stress that was inevitable. It was coming down the pipe. They were just barely making things work. So it does not kill your credit score for 10 years. So for Chapter 7, what I want people to remember, and I don't want to get too into the weeds on Chapter 7, but I do want people to understand what Chapter 7 means. And Chapter 7 is great if you have credit cards, collection lawsuits, medical bills, old taxes. You don't have a lot of assets. You need a fresh start. Chapter 7 is a very good solution for that. and you have to look at those income requirements. If you have a mortgage, you're looking at a foreclosure, there are other chapters of bankruptcy that are more helpful to you. And then I also want people to keep in mind that often bankruptcy will make your credit score go up if you've already been in a precarious situation with your credit as it is. So lots of questions come up about Chapter 7. I just wanted to give a quick overview of it. It's 90 days from start to finish once you file to your discharge. If there are assets involved, it may take longer for your case to close because the trustee has to sell assets and pay creditors. But for the most part, it's a 90-day process. So if you are considering bankruptcy and you've been scared to talk to someone, find out what you qualify for. Find out if there are other options out there. And don't be scared if someone says the B word. Listen, figure out if that's going to be best for your situation, and then go on from there. If you have questions about bankruptcy, feel free to let me know. I'm happy to do more on debt therapy talking about bankruptcy because I find that it's one of the most wrongly looked at areas of the law and areas of personal finance where people just don't understand how it works. So I'm here to educate. Jen Lee with Debt Therapy. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. For more information, visit us at mydebttherapy.com or on our Facebook page, Debt Therapy. We would love to connect and help out on your financial journey.